cliffcentral.com. Dumelang san mona nonke. Hey.
Nadiwula po.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Pullbacker.
We're done.
Are we done?
We're done. That is gupu.
Okay. All right. No, as long, we're done. You're done. You know, I wasn't there.
I want to see if you'll eventually join me in our morning.
We'll get there.
I'm trying to do. Who's that lady that dances on a show every single day? The white lady. She's a big star. Ellen
DeGeneres.
Yeah, she dances every time. I think our audience deserves for us to sing for them. Every show.
I think our audience deserves us to not sing for them. How are you all doing out there? It's Frankly Speaking, 1 hour of discussions that you and I and we need to be having across the country, political, social, economical, and everything in between. Rorisang Shabalala is always, as always, here.
Chovecho.
Dumelang.
Derek.
Legay.
Monate. Wena?
Monate. Kodwa au rubetse monate.
Why about lo botsa batho re ke robetse.
Okay. No, I won't speak about those personal things then.
There's no personal things. Everybody knows that I struggle with sleep.
Everyone knows now. All right, talk to me. What's happening on the show today? We've got something very interesting going on here.
So, there's been big conversation happening around well, a range of things, but we've just come out of, and even our last show was on the issue of hair. Mm. But there's increasing talk about just blackness, you know. And I think it comes, or I feel like it's coming after an extended period where we've spoken about whiteness, and whiteness being problematized. And then more recently, it's not recent actually. I think parallel to that, you've had blackness beginning to rise, mm-hmm. and beginning to rise as, let's call it, a phenomenon in its own right. And we just got curious, right, about, you know, actually, has anyone actually ever considered what does it mean to be black, right? Is it just assumed? So we've had people like Steve Biko who said things like, he was speaking about black consciousness as a mental attitude. Haley Berry has said that blackness is a state of mind. But like, you know, brass tacks, what does it mean? What does it mean to be black? Who gets to decide what black is, and who black is and who isn't black? And what connects? I mean, does blackness refer to a homogenous group of people, or are we talking about different? So it's just a very interesting conversation to have to understand. So we had the show on colors. Are colored people black? Mm-hmm. And even that revealed that within the colored community, there's different views. You know, some colored people believe they're not black. Some colored people say, let me be whoever I want to be.
Do not define me.
Don't define me. Yeah. And other people say, look, I am black as a colored person. So this is a very interesting topic. We speak about blackness a lot, but have we ever understood what it is?
I'm loving what's going on between Frankly Speaking and our listeners here, because I got confronted in a restaurant the other day by a colored woman who said she listened to our show and she has an opinion and she wants to tell us. So people are listening, and please engage with us. Even if it is in a restaurant, that's fine. If you find us there, that's good. Because we want to hear your thoughts. The more people that speak about this, the more people that get involved in these conversations, the more, I suppose, we as a country understand what's going on here. I think this is fascinating. I'm going to probably be quiet for most of the show.
Why? Right? Why?
Well, I mean, I'm not defining blackness here.
You've got questions, don't you?
Yeah, I've got one or two, I suppose. I've got one or two.
Yeah. So today's going to be really interesting. We've got Thato Maganu in studio. Thato is the marketing and communications manager at Vanguard, but that's a little boring. He goes by a more interesting title. He is a self-confessed womanist, homosexual, and progressive patriarch. Woo! Is progressive patriarch an oxymoron?
What is this show about to be about here, right?
I think it attempts to be.
It attempts to be, right? Yeah. So we've got Thato Maganu in studio. We've got Lutando Karen Bata Couture, who's joining us on Skype all the way from France. She's also, she goes by the title. She says, look, I'm human. That's all that I go by. I'm human. If you like, you can call me a radical.
Okay.
So she's going to be a very interesting perspective as well. I think it's a jam-packed show. It's a big questions to be asked. What does it mean to be black? Is blackness the same thing as black consciousness? When and how has blackness transitioned from being a weakness to be hidden to being a strength to be embraced? If whiteness is a vice, is blackness a virtue? So a lot to get into.
Absolutely. And obviously, if you want to join the conversation, hit us up on Twitter at Rory Shabalala or at Yebo underscore Levy. We'll take some of those comments as well a little later in the show. We want to hear from you. Talk to us about it. What are your thoughts about what it means to be black right now? I'll tell you, interestingly enough, through the work that I'm doing, Raw, with Umuzi, the black narrative that's been spoken about for so many years feels like it's evolving at an incredible pace at the moment. And it also feels like it's splitting. So whereas due to the legacy of apartheid, where government collectivized you as one thing, it's very now becoming a thing of saying, yeah, I'm black, but that doesn't mean I have to do X, Y, and Z. Mm. So maybe we need to start there, and I can ask the black men in the room, or black humans in the room, let me say that. What does it mean to be black?
Interesting question. Tato, it's we've seen, as we said, a lot has been said. Halle Berry.
You just ignore that and just move on to your own thing.
No, I want to preface it, right? Oh, okay, you asked the black men in the room.
Sorry, okay, apologies.
The black human.
And then
so,
I interrupt.
And then you interrupt.
Typical
whiteness,
privilege.
Right?
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
As we said, we've heard it being referred to as a state of mind. Steve Biko said, merely by describing yourself as black, you have started a road towards emancipation. You have committed yourself to fight against all forces that seek to use your blackness as a stamp that marks you out as a subservient being. There's been a lot of conversation across generations about blackness. If you had to give us your informed view on what blackness is or what it means to be black, how would you describe it?
I mean, I think it's complicated. I think there is no one answer to what it means to be black. But I think for me, what's always important when we speak about the construction of blackness, right? It's always important to speak about the historical context of how people become black, right? Because if we're going to rely also on black consciousness and Steve Biko and some black radical traditions of thinking about how black people are encountered in the world, it's important to think about how the 13th century and the 14th century create black people, mm-hmm. right? And create blackness as a way of being, because blackness becomes a response to the construct that is white supremacy, which enables what we call whiteness, right? Mm. So the two things coexist. So if we didn't have a world where, as a result of capitalism, racism was created, we wouldn't have whiteness and blackness as constructs, right? Because the two things are creations. They're not natural at all, right? So it becomes very difficult to then pin them down, because I transgress ideas of being black all the time, right? So if you're going to ask me what it means for me to be black, I have no idea. I can tell you that for me it means what it means to be black as a result of the color of my skin and how people respond to me as a result of that, right? But then if we're going to go into constructions of black consciousness, Pan-Africanism, and all of these constructs as responses to how we deal with the problem of whiteness, I transgress those in many ways, right? One, I'm a black gay man. It's a very difficult conversation to have, because we're very interested in this idea of a heterosexual African male, right? Mm-hmm. Or the heterosexual Africa, because homosexuality comes to Africa as a result of the European influence, right? So there are categories that are destabilized all the time, but we like to think of them as very stable categories.
Tato, I mean, I'm interested in this as well. I've been reading this book called Sapiens, and for everyone out there who hasn't read it, it's unbelievable. Basically, the history of humans, Homo sapiens, where we come from. And they talk to exactly what your point is, that it's a social construct. There is no difference between black or white. There was a difference between Neanderthals and Homo sapiens, and that has completely disappeared, and we're all Homo sapiens, right? Which I think is absolutely fair. There is something interesting in our legacy and the social constructs that we did have, you know, through apartheid. So I can't talk about black people across the world. I'm now talking just about South African black people, that there is this movement of we as black people do X, uh-huh. right? Is there anything in that that you feel comfortable with associating with as well?
I think that there are a lot of things that come with the safety of being a homogenous group, mm-hmm. right? And precisely because of the construction of these other, right? So we create communities of safety, we create communities of comfort, right? So Black people had no choice but to be collectively involved in a project that was invested in the dismantling of the apartheid state,
yes.
Right? So there was one collective enemy, or just call it enemy, that we had to fight against.
I think it was, right?
I mean, I can call it other things, but just like, you know, that we had to fight against. So all of us had to invest our energies towards this one key thing. But also, I think what we must always recognize is that even in 1940, even in 1960, 1970, 1980, 1990, and in this current moment, Blackness as a category has continuously been destabilized, right? Mm-hmm. But I think there's something about human nature and our investment in a meta-narrative, right? We want the one story. It's just like it seems as if we can't manage multiple narratives that come out of one single moment.
Mm-hmm.
And what's true is that there are multiple narratives that come out of one single moment, but we always seem to be invested in this one narrative of, oh, all that Black people did during the 40s, 60s, 70s, 80s was to become this homogenous group of people who were all heterosexual, who were all invested in dismantling apartheid. I mean, there are stories that have been written about people who were collaborators with the apartheid state, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just really thinking, for me, what I'm interested in is thinking about how each of us as individuals become to be made Black, and some of the things that we choose to associate with and some of the things that we don't associate with because they are not helpful to the project of living as a human who is ascribed Blackness.
Mm. So we've got Lutando Karen Mbata Couture on the line. Lutando, good morning.
Yes, hello, but there's some noise. Can you just... I don't know. It's really, really harsh.
Really harsh noise? All right. Can you hear us now?
No. It sounds like it's raspy.
Is it raspy? Can you hear us, though?
I can hear you, but you sound like so far away.
Oh, geez. Let's just go on. We're going to try and fix it on our side. We asked our producer to just help us here. But let's see if we can keep the conversation going. Lutando, you are said to be a radical. And Tato has just taken us through what is some of the contradictions about the definitions of Blackness and so on. And one of the things that he raises, which is quite interesting, is that we are not a homogenous grouping as black people. And over time, it's like a range of forces have kind of forced this thing that we're homogenous when we're not. So if we're not homogenous, well, do you agree with that? And if we're not homogenous, what do you believe is the golden thread that ties the various different groupings that identify with Blackness?
I don't think she can hear us, Rory.
Yeah, we've lost her.
France is having problems.
Yeah, or we're having problems. Who knows? Tato, well, let's get back to you on that. So we're not homogenous, as you argue. Fine. What is then the golden thread that ties the different groupings of Black people together as one? Are we one, you know, at all?
I mean, I'm not a spokesperson for Black people.
Yes.
But I think one of the things that brings us all together, and if you come into radical spaces, the one thing that always assumed is the issue of race. Right, we are all made the same by race, as Black people and as white people. Right, so race stabilizes us into a particular category of identification, and then when we start unpacking, which I think what Andrew was referring to earlier, just like how it almost also feels like this construct of Blackness is breaking, right? Just like this narrative is breaking. It's just like it's not breaking. It is just that we are allowing ourselves to have more complicated conversations about what it means to be to be Black, right?
Yeah.
To be individuals, to surface the conversations that we couldn't have because of our social history, right?
But you argue against sameness, but ultimately when we speak and when we reference, you've written an article on an ode to being Black, which speaks collectively. So so that it assumes actually that there are elements that make us one. What would those be? So, or which part of the black grouping were you writing that ode to then?
I mean, I think let's be fair about just like the article speaks to a number of different ways of being black.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's just like it doesn't speak to one version of being black. But I think that article for me was a recognition of the collective effort of fighting, of being radically invested in undoing how blackness has come to be in the world, right? Mm. And part of that is undoing this homogenous narrative of being black, right? So what has been really interesting in the past 3 years in terms of student activism has been this investment in an intersectional approach to undoing whiteness, right? Mm. And white supremacy, right? Mm. In terms of gender, in terms of sexuality, in terms of ableism, in terms of all the tenets that enable white supremacy to continue to be what it is in the world, right? Because, I mean, if we're going to talk about how white supremacist capitalist patriarchy becomes a thing, mm, it's premised on particular principles that are heterosexualness, that are the marginalization of women, that are the marginalization of disabled people, and, right? Various categories. So what has been at the center of the past 3 years, the conversation around bringing blackness to the fore, has been this investment in undoing these very problematic notions of what it means to be human and what it means to be black.
Right? Yeah. But it's you see, I'm still struggling, and maybe I'm just not smart enough, and it's not something that is a secret to the world that I only have two brain cells, but I still then don't get what you're talking about when you say blackness. So on the one hand, you say it's not a homogenous group. Okay, we're talking about black people. So what are we talking about? If you in your own world, when you say there is a grouping called black, which is distinct from a group called white, which you also reference, what is it about this particular group that makes it black and distinct from white?
But I think the two things are different, right? I think that's what I was attempting to articulate here. By I think that there's a historical context, right, of how blackness becomes a construct, and there are black people, right? Whether people would have been black in the 12th century, we don't know, right? Because these sorts of racial categories come as a result of capitalism, right? Mm. But the construct of blackness is the one that says, all of you brown people in the world are second-class citizens. You have no rights. You don't deserve to have rights. So we will treat you like animals. We will put you on boats. We will throw you off boats. Mm. We will make you work. We will make you bring industrialization to the fore, right? Just like that is what blackness is,
that,
right?
Yeah,
you're the machinery that enables the modern world to become what it is, right? But black people are the individuals who have life stories, personal narratives, who were married, who had children, who cried every night, who were raped by masters, who were beaten, and all of those things, right? So the two things are intertwined but separate, because one is a category, right? One is a category that is constructed precisely by whiteness to say, you are different from us, so we will treat you this way. Mm-hmm. And the other is the individual people who become this category.
This category, yeah.
I'm interested in this because I think one of the fascinating movements that I... Can you hear me now? There you go. We're in a new studio, ladies and gentlemen. That's why we're baffling around a little bit. Let's just be honest there. So apologies if you hear any sound interruptions. One of the interesting things that I'm finding at the moment, Tato and Rory, is that there seems to be a movement away from this black collective that you're talking about, that I'm not just black. I'm a human before I'm black, and I have a whole bunch of things that subscribe or ascribe to. But on the other side of the coin, there's a huge movement to say, let's collectivize white people, right? Whiteness, white privilege. If you're white, you are then this, this, and this. How does that, in your mind, Tato specifically, how does that equate to itself? We're saying we want individuals. We want to be individuals on the black side. But on the white side, we want to collectivize you more. Is there a little bit of a... I don't know what the word is. Like oxymoron is there?
Tato,
bit of a
Tato smiling is.
He
like,
wants
like,
to know. He's,
like,
he's about to backlash me. No, I'm fine. I want to hear. I'm interested. Yeah, yeah. I don't proclaim to be the one who knows, so I'm asking the question.
Yeah, I also don't know. However, I think what is important for me is, in order to fight the enemy must look like something,
mm-hmm.
and the enemy looks like whiteness and white supremacy. Right, because I think what has become patently clear is that when we speak about white privilege, we're speaking about over 800 years of generational privilege, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not speaking about you, Andrew, the individual, right? Because it's like that's when you're going to tell me, oh, but you worked so hard and your father was poor and all of these things. I'm not interested in that narrative.
And I have black friends.
Right, and you have black friends, thank right? You, it's like, oh, you. But like my, like, oh, we hang out, I can speak a bit of Zulu. I'm not interested in that narrative because you benefit from the privilege of what your skin tone is,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is a construct of whiteness.
Mm-hmm.
You benefit from the privilege of the generational benefits that your family generationally you've enjoyed as a result of white supremacy, right? I don't as a black individual. I don't as a black human, right? So I am invested in undoing what whiteness and white supremacy constructs for me as a black person, right? As this homogenous entity, which is blackness, right? So I need to be invested in doing that work, even within the black collective, right? And I think one of the things that we always speak about is that white people must do the work in their own communities, right? Mm. To undo whatever this structure of whiteness and white supremacy looks like. And black people must do the same. So we must never attempt to correlate the two things because we have very different work to do, right? Because my work as a black person is deconstructing for myself what it means to be black, what blackness means, right? And the sort of ascriptions that come as a result of that, right? Your work as a white person is to undo that work in the white community and to determine whatever that might look like, right? Mm. So I am invested in homogenizing white people because the constant thread for me is whiteness and white supremacy, right? Mm. Because there is no white individual that I will ever encounter that does not benefit from white privilege and white supremacy, right? And I suppose the same could be true for you. There is no black individual that you encounter that does not get disadvantaged by whiteness and white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
However, the work can never be the same. You and I, as for me as a black person and you as a white person, we can never be doing the same work.
No, I don't think it's about the same work. For me, it's about this idea of hypocrisy in a way. And please correct me if I'm wrong, because I stand to be corrected. But I think one of the big things around this idea of blackness and speaking about blackness is to be seen as an individual rather than to be seen as a collective, and that can be many different things.
But
right?
I think Andrew, you've had 800 years of living as an individual, and I think that's what we're saying.
No, this is not to say that, you know, like white people mustn't do a whole bunch of work,
yeah.
right? That's absolutely, we're on the same page here. That's not, I think, to be argued. I think what the argument is to say, is it fair if we need to see people as individuals? And fairness might be a bit of a, I see you laughing there, but like,
I think I get it. I think I get Tato. Is that?
No, I'm not saying.
Is that? No, I'm not.
Okay,
you're not.
Okay.
No, you know Tato in his article. Tato in his article speaks about why whiteness needs to be a thing we protect. And it's not a. So here's the thing. I think what I'm understanding is that we don't necessarily need to treat the two groups in the same way. In order to arrive at what needs to be arrived at within the two groupings.
Totally agree with that.
So fairness then does not necessarily mean equality.
It's not about equality. So, and I agree with you, Tato, that different work needs to be done amongst different groups, right? But we are grouping people already, which is fine because of the legacy of the 600 years that you spoke about, right? I think the only thing is that as humans, isn't there a whole bunch of work that needs to be done to see people as individuals? To see people as humans again and not just as that collective thing. So, yes, you know, like white people need to go talk in white circles about different things to what black people need to speak about. Agreed. But then by saying things like whiteness, white privilege, aren't we then just going in the reverse direction? So you can imagine in 600 years, and who knows whether this will happen or not, then the whites are a collective, right? And if you're white, it means that you're X, Y, and Z, right? And then we haven't learned as a human race. Now, that's not to say that white people get off scot-free. They don't. The work needs to be done, and I agree with you 100%. I'm just saying, is there not another way to frame this to say, I need to see Rory as Rory, and Rory needs to see Andrew as Andrew, and Andrew has his own issues that he needs to deal with as a white person, and Rory has some issues that he needs to deal with as a black person. But we still need to see each other collectively as individuals, if that makes sense.
That makes complete sense. However, the power...
However, I completely and utterly disagree with you. This is good. I like this. I like
this. Power relations of the world make it impossible for you to see me as a human being, as a human.
Mm.
It's not possible, right? And I think just like what's fascinating always, particularly when we have conversations about race and racism in South Africa, is that we think that race and racism are unkind words, and they're not. The unkind words are facilitated by the structure of racism, right? And racism comes out of the 13th century through capitalism, right? That initial decision by a group of Europeans to say,
we need labor.
We are going to go out into the world and we've seen that there are these other people. Let's go and make them the people that bring about industrialization and bring forth the modern world, and we will not treat them as human beings, right? So you, in coming to the world as that person who can make the decision on a daily basis, I come into the world as someone who is constructed as a non-human on a daily basis. So it is impossible for us to start thinking about a world where we are equal, right? Before we can do the work.
It's actually, it's raising a very interesting issue, which I think deserves to be dug into a little bit more, about sort of collectively privileged but individually liable, or the other way around, individually privileged but collectively liable, which is actually a conversation that I think a lot of white people are having, just to go off on a tangent about, you know, we were collectively privileged, but can you please see me as an individual for the purposes of liability's sake? Find a penny sparrow and use and make sure that she is liable, but when we have to deal with the consequences, it must be individualized. So another conversation worth having. I'm just interested, you said something there about or at least the way that we're struggling to get to the heart of blackness, or maybe it's just us. Should we be, are we at a stage where we should be defining blackness or undefining blackness? Where are we as far as that spectrum? Are we still, because as you said, blackness is a construct that wasn't created by black people. So I imagine that at some stage it needs to be deconstructed before we construct it again. Where are we on the spectrum of undefining and then defining?
But when we say, where are we, who is the we?
Good question.
About,
yeah. Right? So
because I mean, so what's interesting for me about, and I've held this position for a number of years, and I know people don't like me for it, but one of the things that I would really appreciate about this construct that is South Africa is if white South Africans would actually shut up. We need white South Africans to shut the hell up when we're having conversations about race and racism, right? Because like what just happened right now, Andrew, is that your investment is in being seen as a human being, right? And I'm saying to you, but you've been seen as a human being for 800 years and I haven't. So when am I ever going to be able to have the conversation and to do the work that allows me to be seen as a human being without you continuously saying, oh, but like, me also, I'm human, right? But it's like, but I know you are.
No. I think you're right. And please don't get me wrong. I think what's important here, and I think your point, Rory, was interesting about collective liability. Because I have to take collective liability for Penny Sparrow. Not because we are white, but we share the same narrative as being white in South Africa and the legacy of that. But I think the one thing is to say, so I'm always a keen observer of continuous learning and continuous failing, learning, getting better. And my thought process around this is to say, if we do exactly that, where we say, okay, right, I want to see you, Tato, as an individual, okay? And white people, I think, need to be educated. So they can't just be sitting outside. Like, they can't be sitting outside and having conversations amongst themselves, because they'll have the wrong conversations. That's my feeling. They'll have the wrong conversations and come to the wrong conclusions. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if there's another way in which we can see. Maybe I'm trying to defend.
You see, you're taking a conversation on blackness.
I know, I'm making it about whiteness. You're right.
I'm making it about whiteness.
I'm feeling that.
Which is quite interesting.
No, I'm feeling that. But this shouldn't be the conversation.
But that's a very interesting observation, right? I think so. So here's a question, Tato. If blackness, so would you then disagree with this thing that blackness is a state of mind? Because if blackness is a state of mind, then can white people be black?
So you're asking me to give comment on the black god that is Biko.
Hey, I didn't say he's a black god. I'm just saying he's one of the people that's attempted to define this thing.
I mean, in the sort of dynamic in this room for me speaks to how we can problematize Biko's articulation of blackness as a state of mind, right? I mean, I know Andrew through people that we know and all of these things. Mm. And I know what he means by I'm someone who attempts to learn and relearn and fail and learn and all of these things. But I think that's precisely the point, right? The point is you have to be invested in attempting to do a particular form of work that you will continuously fail at, right? So If we're talking about blackness as a state of mind, for me, I think that's possibly one of the most violent things we can ever say, right? In terms of understanding how the world privileges white skin, right? So I'm at Wits, and one of the conversations that's been happening at Wits for the past 2 years has been the Ruth First Memorial Lecture, right? In terms of how we honor Ruth First as a white liberal who was killed in apartheid resistance, right? But I think it's precisely because of Ruth's skin tone and skin color that she's revered above.
It could be the Solomon Mahlangu
other black people
lecture.
Right?
It could be
because it's precisely the mechanics and the dynamics of how whiteness and white privilege and white supremacy reconstructs itself and replicates itself, right? I'm just like, because of Ruth could not have died in vain. She sacrificed her life. She committed class suicide, which I think is absolute bullshit. There's no such thing as class suicide because class is a connection of networks. There is no way that you can ever be divorced from your networks completely. Right. So just like, I mean, the story that people tell about how Ruth used to go to London and just like be at someone's house and doing these things and doing all of these things. I'm just like, what black person in apartheid times would have been able to have that sort of mobile freedom? Mm. Right. So I personally have some discomfort with thinking about blackness as a state of mind, because when white people come into the conversation and they become blackened, we don't suffer the same consequences, and we never will. So I think it's another attempt and another way by the white system to continuously say, oh, but like, see, offer me redemption, I'm trying to do the work. And it's like, well, I think the work must be done with your own people to say, well, people are saying they want land. Right? Mm. Go sit with your own people, have the conversation about land, have them ostracize you, but don't come to us. It's very easy to come to black people and say, well, my people have ostracized me. No, go fight with your people, right? Mm. Continue to enjoy the ostracization, because this is how black people feel like in the world on a daily basis. I have a very close friend of mine who is a white academic at Wits, and she has been ostracized by her white community. And I had a conversation with her, and I asked her the question, just like, how does it feel to be uncertain of yourself on a daily basis, right? And I mean, she gave me a very beautiful answer. I'm just like, we were speaking about just like our state of minds and whatever. But what was important for me was that finally, she's getting to understand what it feels like to be a black person in the world, to be unsure of yourself, to walk into a room and never know for certain what you're going to experience, right? That's a black person's experience. That's a homosexual person's experience. That's a woman's experience on a daily basis, right? People who don't benefit from the power structures of the world, right? So it can be very easy to say blackness is a state of mind. White people can come into the conversation. They can go dreads. They can grow dreads. They can live in Soweto and all of these things. The world will never respond to you in the same ways that it does to me. So
Karen, are you back with us?
I think so. Can you hear me?
Yeah. So we've got Thato in the room here, and he is adamant. He speaks against this black god. If Biko is indeed the black god, then he has just performed black blasphemy. He says that one of the most violent things that can ever be said is to say that blackness is just a state of mind. What's your view on that, and on the general definition of what it means to be black?
Well, for me, I've always said this. I think I am human before I'm black, you know, and I think that's also comes from the fact that I travel a lot and I get to meet different races and understand different cultures and structures and traditions. So, however, we cannot, you know, deny that whiteness is normal. You know, and anything else is different. So whiteness is viewed as default. That's just a fact of the world. Any other race is nothing, is not important. And if you deny that as a white person, then we're never going to move forward. However, when it comes to blackness, I mean, I think we also need to also stop, you know, identifying ourselves as a skin color. You know, I'm not saying that has passed. I think it also, America has a huge influence on this blackness thing. I don't understand how a person that is born in Africa can refer to himself as a black person. Do you know what I mean? Like as in the skin color. So
I don't understand what you mean. So you're saying you don't understand how a person born in Africa can describe himself as black.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Help me
understand. You're an African, not black. And what's the difference?
There's a huge difference. You must understand that, you know, I think also we draw this blackness, this black fight from American influence, from your Malcolm X's, your Martin Luther King. There has been a huge influence, especially in South Africa, since, you know, we suffered similar, you know, I don't know, austerities with like black people in America. However, to come back home, one has to really come back home into the mentality of an African person, how he behaves, his cultures, his traditions, you know, and that's when language comes in. Because here's another thing. If we somehow had to speak our own languages, we will truly identify ourselves as African, but just not black. Am I making sense?
Well, let's ask the academic in the room. We are sitting on the sidelines here. This is bigger than us. Thato, do you agree? Does this make sense? It seems to go a bit of a tangent from what you were suggesting.
I mean, sorry, what's her name?
Lutando.
So I sort of understand what Lutando is saying. However, I think, and why for me, the history of how blackness becomes made is forever important, right? Because there is something called the coloniality of being, right? So after the colonialists leave, they've left their institutions, they've left culture, they have completely converted, right? Just like people's ways of living. So if we're going to speak about how, or just like we're not understanding how people on the African continent refer to themselves as black, well, they've been made black. And that's why they refer to themselves as black, right? So if we're going to say, oh, because I travel a lot and I meet different cultures, I was at in Dubai at the Abu Dhabi airport, and I was reminded that I was black because I was with a group of white friends. And at immigration, they were all allowed to go into the country, and my bags were searched as the only black body there. So I am continuously reminded in the world that I am black. So I cannot, there is no way. I would like to think of myself as a human. I think of myself as a human being, but the world responds to me as a black body.
Right? I think it raises an interesting question about then, because the world has defined you as that, must it be something that you embrace? And the Population Registration Act of 1950 actually defined, I think it was one of the first pieces of legislation that went to defining and classifying people according to their race groups. Andrew, would you like to hear how we were defined as black or as white or alternatively colored? There was actually a set of criteria.
Please.
So and it was not just physical. They said it had something to do with social standing and so on. And that's what I want to bring back to Karen, because it speaks about the characteristics of the person's head hair, characteristics of the person's other hair, the skin color, the facial features, the home language, and especially knowledge of Afrikaans, area where the person lives, the person's friends and acquaintances, employment, and then it speaks about socioeconomic status. Socioeconomic status can be the difference between you being black and white, or white, and then your eating and drinking habits, funnily enough. Now, listen to the definition in the Act. It says, a white person is a person who in appearance is obviously a white person, who is generally not accepted as a colored person, or is generally accepted as a white person and is not in appearance obviously a white person. That just confused me.
Obviously, Rory.
Obviously. So Karen, it seems that what Tato, or at least if we look at the legislation that almost created this or canonized this, we see it acknowledging the fact that it's about more than just, so blackness is about socioeconomic status. It's about a lot more things than just the color of your skin, and that blackness can be something that is distinct from African, and perhaps that these might be related but distinct struggles. Would you agree or disagree?
I'm in between. I do agree with you, Humane, to a certain stage, of course. You know, I mean, every single African person all over the world is somehow historically wounded, you know, by the past. However, I mean, moving forward, I don't know. I'm a type of person, I'm young, you know what I mean? And I'd like for us to move forward as a black nation or as an African nation. And if we keep, and I know a lot of people say, don't forget about your past, but study the past and do something about it. What can we do from this? Because like I said, if we keep restricting ourselves to a certain race, I mean, the world is huge. There's so many things to explore besides just race. And I've noticed that when he was talking about when he went to Dubai, he noticed that, okay, he's black, and they paid more attention to him. Another person, Muslim guy here in France, when I go through, you know, the airports when I'm going to London, a Muslim guy gets searched more than me, but I'm black, and I get to pass freely. Do you know what I mean? So a different person can say the same thing as well. Asian people as well, you know, they
Lutendo,
get a lot
all of those,
you know,
people,
when they go to...
All of those people you're describing are constructed as black and brown in the world, so they're not white. And I think that's the point, right? So there's a thing called the Global South that is constructed as not white. And all of those people, Muslim people, Asian people, black people from the continent, the diaspora, are always the people who get searched, the people who are accused of terrorism, the people who are accused of the most heinous crimes that are committed by white people, but are seen as saving the free world. But when black and brown people do them, they are seen as terrorist acts, right? So out of interest in...
Hence I said my opening statement was very clear, you know, that white is viewed by the world as normal and is made its default.
Yeah.
So it needs to be undefaulted. Then how do we do that? How do we, you know, undefaulting this whiteness, this white privilege, is by white accepting and acknowledging that, you know, they need to recognize that white privilege, I mean, really, really exists. And they need to accept that black people, it's a necessity for African people to speak about these issues so that we can move forward. But then at the end of the day, what I always say, but let's not just get stuck into race, because what I see a lot of people, instead of, I don't know, instead of focusing on issues that affect this blackness, a lot of people would rather focus on race. I don't know if you understand what I mean. We have educational problems, but a lot of people would rather focus, oh, it's because I'm black. And don't get me wrong, I know just because I live in Europe, a lot of people expect me, you know, that, you know, you can't be, obviously you live in Europe, you're privileged. No, I've been through everything. However, through study and sitting down with elders that are African, you'd find that because they've accepted their Africanism, they're focusing on, you know, African economy, for instance. You know, how do we get out from this so-called poverty that everybody is so calling us?
Lutando, you know, is it so-called? so Lutando, let's
have... Well, it is so-called, yes, it is so-called poverty. So-called. Because Africa, it is a wealthy continent. However, it is exploited by America, Europe, and Asia. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it is so-called poverty. We are not poor. Africa is not poor. It is exploited.
Lutando, would you say Africa is poor, but black people... I mean, Africa is wealthy, but black people are poor?
How do I... Mentality-wise, yes. Our mental state is in poverty.
Wow.
We are not feeding our minds enough. We are not expanding our minds enough to get out of these situations.
Lutando, I think that you are utterly disrespectful to the many black people who wake up every morning and irk out a living and are resourceful and are imaginative and are creative about how to resolve their issues. Right? Let's talk about the young people.
Wait, Lutando. Wait. Let Tato speak. 1 second.
Let's talk about the many young people throughout this continent who are inventing, right? Inventing things to manage and navigate this poverty that you're speaking about that is so-called, which is very real and very material, right? Let's talk about the African Leadership Academy and the young people that come to the African Leadership Academy who have completely transformed the communities that they live in on a daily basis. And you are saying that our mental state is impoverished and we live in so-called poverty. I think that is utterly disrespectful. I would even ask you to retract that statement because
Listen, can you listen so that I think you misunderstood me. I didn't say Africa is in poverty. I said Africa is exploited.
No, but you said the people, our mental state.
Hey, can I just finish? So, when you are being exploited, so I see, I know about everything that you're talking about. I'm one of those young African people that are making changes. However, it's very few of us. The rest are still in labor. The rest are still misinformed. The rest are still poorly minded. The minds are not informed of how to free themselves from this exploitation. Yeah, including our leaders. Our leaders are puppetry. They puppetry to this European empires, you know. So, yes, these young people are making those changes, but it's not enough. It's only probably just 10% out of 90% that is still being exploited. And why is it exploited? We are not informed enough. That's a fact. All right. We are poorly in
Karen, I'm going to have to use my broadcaster and white privilege to cut you short there, unfortunately, because we are running out of time. Thank you, though, for joining us. We do want to continue this conversation, and we'd love to continue it with you online. So please do join the conversation on Twitter and Facebook. Tato, I'm interested in a question here around, because we've gone all over the place, which is a really interesting observation. When we speak about blackness, we include, I mean, Africanness was brought in, which is incredible, and whiteness has been brought in through me, I suppose. I'm interested to hear from your personal journey and perspective. You classify yourself, or you are homosexual. Is there a
difference?
Yeah, no, apologies, apologies. I'm sorry. That was a big mistake.
Today's not a good day. Yeah?
No, it's not a good day. No. But classify is important because you can be homosexual and not classify yourself as homosexual, right? So that's what I meant. Apologies. You are homosexual.
Identify, I think.
Yes, identify. That's the right word. Thank you. You identify as homosexual. Do you find yourself drawn to the black homosexual community or the white homosexual, or is there a difference, or is it just everyone who's homosexual collectivizes together? And this isn't a trick question. I'm genuinely interested. So please don't feel like I'm trying to about to trick you. I'm really not.
And that's fine. And I also will choose not to answer that question because I think you're asking me to comment on an unhelpful binary. And I think my attempt in this conversation is to speak to the complexity, right? So if you're then asking me if I'm drawn to the black gay community or the white gay community...
Not in terms of what your preference is in terms of who your boyfriend might be. I'm just saying generally...
I understand what you mean. Cool. Like in terms of the community I feel the most safe with and all of these things, where do I go
and all
of that. I'm just like, I'm not going to answer that question.
So you think that it's complicating an issue?
I don't think it's complicated. I think it's simplifying a complicated issue. And I think that's what I've been trying to say, right? To say that as a black human being who becomes black in the world, I am complex. I am complicated. Mm. I can have multiple relations with multiple people of different racial groupings, right? So I do not want to speak on whether I find or which group do I find to be the most welcoming and the most helpful. But I think if we're going to go there, then we must also speak about how whiteness and white supremacy constructs these spaces differently, right? So I suppose perhaps as a result of my social disposition, just in terms of the way I speak, what I'm able to speak about, and all of the things that I've been saying here, many people can make assumptions about which spaces I hang out in, right? And that's precisely as a result of how closer to whiteness I am, right? I'm just like, so what sort of middle class privileges am I able to access, right, as a result of that? And we must also speak about how when we construct blackness as a response to this, what it disadvantages and disallows, right, in terms of the black community. And so what is it that people are allowed to be and not allowed to be, right? Precisely because of what whiteness is allowed to be and not allowed to be, right? So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. This is a heavy, this one is heavy and complex. That much I agree with. There's somebody on the line who wants to join in on the conversation. Papi Dlelu, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, how's it going? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. I'm still recovering from that woman that just spoke a few minutes ago. Man.
What do you mean recovering?
I think everybody is trying to recover. Ignorance.
That's just another level of ignorance. Well, let me introduce myself. I'm a South African. I'm based in London. I've been here for the last 14 years. And,
so you also have that traveled perspective about blackness in Africa.
I don't want to describe myself the same as that woman, but I believe I've also stopped calling her that woman.
Stop calling her that woman. Her name is Lutando. Her name is Lutando. Yes,
Lutando. Okay. Yeah. No, I'm a student of this thing. You know, I've really been studying it. So let me give you a context about myself. I'm a South African. I'm from Durban. I'm a Zulu. I've been here, and I'm married to a Chinese woman. And we have children. My eldest kid is 8, and my youngest is 4. So my kids are homeschooled. So I'm an entrepreneur, and I homeschool them from home. So a subject of race came about, where my eldest daughter asked me. She's like, "Daddy, how come this? You know, we have different skin tones, you know, and stuff." And you know, before I answered the question, you know, I said, okay, give me a couple of weeks, you know, to get an answer for you. You know, no, because, you know, growing up in South Africa, you know, I did not want to, you know, to use my experience and to sort of tarnish her whole concept of race. But at the same time, I wanted her to know the truth. So I went back. For me, I'm a creationist, you know, I'm a theologian. You know, about I went back to read scripture. I went back to read some old books to just about this whole thing of race. And I came up, you know, one thing very interesting, as you said earlier, that this whole thing of race is made up. You know, there's only one group, or there's only one human race. There's not more than one. You know, I mean, as a creationist, there was only, you know, one human being created. You know, so
Bubby,
now, so yes,
we have to wrap. We're running out of time. If you can rush, not because your point is irrelevant, because yes. they're about to kick us out of studio.
Okay. No, but I just want to say that I agree with everything that you guys are saying. This whole thing of race is all made up, and you see, us black people. Okay, let me just cut it down to this. It's a social construct. You know, so I went back to my daughter and I said, no, you are not multiracial. You are actually multi-ethnic, you see, because there's only one race of people. Now, coming back to the whole race thing and the whole blackness thing. Now, in order for why this racial construct was constructed, as you said, it was purely economical to justify oppressing you know, or black people. So why, if you look at white supremacists, they always stress on a couple of things that, you know, we whites are different from black people. Look at how they behave. Look at what they behave. So in order for them to reinforce this whole superiority thing, they have to split us up. So that's why they can never accept that we are one race of people. Because if they accepted that we're one race of people, that means we're just like them. We've got the same abilities as them.
Mm.
So that's why white supremacy thrives on this. Even I was watching a documentary called The Union of South Africa. It was a BBC documentary that was shot in South Africa in 1957 when they were passing the Bill of Apartheid. And if you look at Stray Dog,
unfortunately, we have 2 minutes left. We're going to have to cut it short there. But you know what? This is a conversation worth having again. And we'd really like to get in touch with you so you can be part of the conversation again. But thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, thanks.
This was a complicated, complex conversation. Took us to Dubai, took us to France, took us to Africa versus black.
I don't think we've answered the question.
We haven't answered the question.
We haven't got close.
In an hour.
Other than the fact that I feel like what we have answered is that this is very complex.
Yes.
And that there is no one single story.
Yes.
I mean, that's my thoughts.
Well, Andrew Levy, let you and I get out of here, and let's make sure that we have this conversation again. Tato, thank you very much. I think I'm confused. That's what I think. Tato, thank you very much for joining us, and we'd love to have you again so we can dig deeper into this issue.
Okay, it was my pleasure. It was very interesting.
Tato, thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate it. Hey, listen, if you want to catch more about Frankly Speaking, cliffcentral.com/Frankly Speaking. You can also join the Facebook page. Lots of conversations going on there. So all you need to do is go onto Facebook and hit up Frankly Speaking. Yeah, the comments there are crazy. I'm sure Tato is going to enjoy replying to some of those. Hey? Have yourself a great day. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, Vito. cliffcentral.com.